Today on CityCast Chicago. As expected, Joe Biden won the Democratic presidential nomination and Donald Trump carried the Republican nomination in Illinois. No big surprises there. But what about all the other local races we've been talking about? I'm here with the team to recap the surprises and snoozes of primary day. It's Wednesday, March 20th. I'm Jacoby Cochran, and this is What Chicago is Talking About. I'm here with executive producer Simone Alisea. Good morning, Simone.
Good morning, Jacoby.
And producer Michelle Navarro, welcome to your first 5 a.m. election recap with us. How you feeling?
I'm feeling great. Good morning, Jacoby.
Oh, man. Let's get right into this, y'all. We have been preparing ourselves, our listeners, our friends and family for the primary election for months now. While we've still got some precincts outstanding this morning and we've got mail-in ballots to count, some of those races haven't been called yet. But let's get things started with what we do know. We would typically start breaking out the names headed to face off in November right here. But we had a referendum on all of our ballots that dominated, or as I thought, dominated a lot of local conversation in recent weeks. Of course, I'm talking about Bring Chicago Home. If passed, it would increase a one-time tax on property sales over $1 million, lowering it on properties under $1 million, and use the revenue to fund affordable housing and provide increased resources for folks experiencing homelessness and housing insecurity. Michelle, after back and forth court decisions, tons of TV and online ads, years of campaigning, and a very, very jargon-filled ballot question that even caught me off guard a little bit, and I've been preparing for this, Bring Chicago Home votes have been tallied. What are the results so far?
So, as you mentioned, it hasn't been called yet, but we're at a wide margin with 79% of votes in. Bring Chicago Home is poised for rejection. As of now, about 54% of voters voted no and 46% voted yes. Now, supporters of the real estate transfer tax referendum were hoping, like you mentioned, that it would pass to create a stream of revenue to directly address the current housing and homelessness crisis in the city. You know, there's, like you mentioned too, there's still mail-in ballots still need to be counted. And if it does end up failing, this is a really big blow to Mayor Brandon Johnson, whose campaign promoted the Bring Chicago Home measure as a stream of revenue to fund housing initiatives.
I mean, that last point is very big. This would be a huge blow to Brandon Johnson. This was something he campaigned on. This was something that his huge donors and supporters have been pushing. This was one of those progressive initiatives that's not only been in the work for 6 years, but was one that was really one of his creative ways of raising revenue that wasn't increasing property taxes, which is traditionally your way of picking up revenue where you need it. Simone, surprise or snooze here?
I'll be honest, this outcome to me is kind of a snooze.
That's crazy.
I don't think it is surprising that people don't want to tax themselves when they see tax increase anywhere on their ballot.
You think all of those voters were potential $million-dollar property owners?
That's not what I think. That's not what I think. But you understand what I mean, though. I think it's a psychological thing of like you see tax increase and immediately kind of your haunches go up. As you pointed out, that ballot question when you saw it, like, you know, you had to flip over your ballot. It was on the back. It was long. You know, it's a three-part question.
It didn't say bring Chicago home anywhere.
It doesn't say bring Chicago home anywhere. And even though the measure included, as you mentioned, lowering that real estate transfer tax on property sales under $1 million, I think that was like kind of tough for voters. Mm-hmm. I also think there was such a fierce opposition campaign. That opposition campaign spent a lot of money. You had the confusing of it's off the ballot, it's on the ballot in the courts. And I think, you know, combined with low voter turnout overall, I think it's not that surprising that, you know, it just wasn't able to kind of overcome sort of the struggles that were inherent in the question itself.
Now, you made a very good point there. I remember the morning of voting. I went to one place. My girlfriend went to another place. And at one point, we are just testing each other like, We went to the Bring Chicago Home website throughout the campaign. We follow them on social media. I've been seeing the updates. I was prepared for the battle language, and still, once I looked at it, that immediate sort of overwhelming language just kind of smacked me. You know, once you see all of these numbers, once you know you're in the booth and you're thinking about a tax increase, regardless if it's for you, the way we've been conditioned to just reject the idea of increased taxes more times than not, it showed up once again here, it feels.
One thing I will say, though, I think a little wrinkle in this is I looked up how did Chicago vote on the graduated income tax in 2020, which was a statewide constitutional amendment that was voted on. But in Chicago, that passed with 71% of the vote. That passed by a huge margin in Chicago.
That was also in a general election,
right? In a general election in 2020, where that was a lot more competitive, way higher turnout. Really different circumstances, but it does show that in some circumstances, Chicagoans are willing to tax themselves. And I think it's also, you know, the other wrinkle here too is like Brandon Johnson was just elected last year, right? And I think there was maybe some thought that like he was going to be able to ride that out to like
that progressive wave that got him into City Hall was sort of carried through with some of these initiatives.
And what got Bring Home Chicago on the ballot in the first place, right?
Exactly. I don't know. This one of the reasons we started with this is because I think it's been, for me, one of the strongest examples to remind myself of the media bubble that I sit in, the social media bubble that I sit in, because for me, it felt like the advocacy was fierce, that the groundswell was there. When we did our run through, I was convinced. I was like, I don't know, just because of how much we have talked about this, how much I have seen it, you know, my understanding of it and my understanding of the crisis, that this is something that Chicagoans will push forward. But as of now, as we're recording this, it seems like it will be rejected. So I am going to be very interested to see how Mayor Brandon Johnson pivots here, right? Like, just because we don't have this potential $100 million annually don't mean we don't need to find $100 million annually and more to address this affordable housing crisis that touches so many different pockets of this city. And so I'm going to say this was a huge surprise to me, a snooze for Simone, but let's continue down our ballot. Simone, another big race we had our eyes on was the Cook County State's Attorney's race. After 8 years, current lead prosecutor Kim Fox decided to step down and out of that harsh limelight. And the four-person race that ensued to replace her really became a battle of big endorsements and donations between the top two candidates. Simone, how did this one shake out?
So this one is still really tight. It's a little too close to call, but as of early this morning, former state appellate court justice Eileen O'Neill Burke is leading over University of Chicago lecturer, former prosecutor Clayton Harris III, 51-49%, or by about 10,000 votes. O'Neill Burke was leading throughout the night by a much larger margin, but some of those later returns, the precincts that came in later started to break toward Harris. She was still pretty cautious last night, you know, wasn't claiming victory. And Harris's camp too, sort of waiting and seeing, trying to see, hoping that you know, again, the precincts that we still have outstanding and any mail-in ballots might continue to break his way. So, you know, if this is still a little bit up in the air, but, you know, if O'Neill Burke wins, it would be, I think, kind of a rejection of Kim Fox and Fox's policies, right? Mm-hmm. Fox is so well known for, you know, it came in on sort of a wave of reform prosecutors that kind of happened around the country when she was elected. And she, you know, pushed for things like the end of cash bail. She made a real point of really cracking down on and looking into wrongful convictions. You know, also, you know, focused on things like diversion for low-level crimes. But a lot of those initiatives kind of made her office a punching bag for other local leaders whenever crime did spike, accusing her of not being aggressive enough in prosecuting carjackings and retail theft and things like that.
Yeah, it's one of those things that whether the data proved it or not, whether you could actually point to somewhere that said the Cook County State's Attorney's Office deserved responsibility. That was the sort of tried and true response from police officials, sometimes after out of the mayor's office, definitely from sort of critics at the local and national level. And in many ways, Harris ran not as a not really a strong contentious rhetoric towards the former or the current state's attorneys, the current state's attorney. He really said he wanted to strengthen some of those programs. He wanted to give them more resources. He wanted to provide a little more oversight. But over those last few weeks, O'Neill Burke really started to go against even more strongly the track record of Kim Fox, saying as much last weekend at the parade, if you like how things are going, if you like what this office is doing, if you're okay with Chicago's criminal legal system, you know, I'm not your candidate, which, you know, obviously didn't, you know, may not have cost her any votes or race. It seems that people have, in some ways, are moving back towards some of that, you know, tougher on crime rhetoric, at least at the state's attorney level.
Yeah. And O'Neill Burke, too, it's worth noting, you know, out fundraised Harris by quite a lot. A lot of her donors. Yeah. And a lot of her donors were sort of, you know, downtown business types, people who, you know, are very concerned about retail theft and you know, sort of the perception of crime in Chicago. Right. Their business kind of relies on that. And so I think O'Neill Burke was able to kind of stake a claim in that camp. Harris, for his part, you know, he didn't really outline a whole lot different that he would do from Fox. He was also the party pick. He got the endorsement from the Cook County Democratic Party. And, you know, even though Fox never made a public endorsement in this race, there was some reporting out of the Tribune the morning of the election that Fox posted on her private Instagram, you know, that she was team Harris, right? Harris was sort of the, you know, unofficial anointee of picking up that mantle. But yeah, we will keep an eye on this race and keep folks updated. But right now, O'Neill Burke is leading.
Michelle, very quick before we move on, was this a surprise or snooze for you?
This was a snooze for me. I just think, you know, coming from all the criticism that Kim Fox received, it just feels really reactionary for people who weren't a fan of her to kind of, you know, go to the person that is most different from her. And I mean, money always wins. And like Simone mentioned, I mean, she had raised millions of dollars. Her donors were venture capitalists, investment managers, lawyers, real estate developers. Like, these are people who got big bucks. And like, not to bring Chicago home, but sounds very familiar of what the like what that opposing side was. And so it just seems like money wins, you know. And in this case, I think there's a lot of people who are concerned about public safety in the city, and they felt like that for some reason was pinned on the state attorney's office. And so I'm really interested in seeing how it closes out, because it is a tight race. So it could still go, you know, it could still go either way.
On to the U.S. House of Representatives. 12 of Illinois' 17 congressional representatives ran unopposed in their party, so it was a lot of big snooze on the ballot. But one competitive Democratic race that we really watched close was in the 7th District, where long-term incumbent Danny Davis faced four challengers, two of which were positioned as potential replacements for the 30-year congressman. Michelle, what was popping in the 7th District?
Danny Davis won over 50% of the vote, beating out his two big challengers, Keena Collins, who, you know, is an organizer. This is her third time running, and City Treasurer Melissa Conyers Irvin. Davis first was elected in office in 1996, has served 14 consecutive terms. He hopes to make it 15. He will face Republican Chad Coppe in the general election November 5th.
One of the reasons we really followed this was because back in 2022, when Keena Collins was running for her second attempt to unseat Danny Davis, she was really able to close that gap. Her first election, she got about 14% of the vote. Second election, got that thing up to 46%. Unfortunately, You threw another bigger name in the field, and Collins slipped back to about 19% with her and Irving splitting the vote. But one thing that I thought was very telling is that Danny Davis beat everybody combined. It's clear that in that district, and I'm not saying name recognition to be disrespectful to the congressman's track record, but to just say, right, the incumbent has an advantage for a reason. People are familiar with them. They can point to their history. They can point to their voting track record, right? Danny Davis is somebody who you saw throughout the community who would show up at big and small events alike. And while both candidates, you know, tried to pull back and say, hey, we do think it's time for new blood. We not saying this is just about Davis's age, but Davis obviously felt the way about that. He mentioned it in his, you know, in his speech. He was like, hey, don't count us out. Your 80-year-old, your senior citizen politicians, that we are still here. We're still strong. And it seems as if the energy in the district was still behind the congressman. Simone, surprise or snooze here.
It's a morning of snoozes. It's never going to be a surprise when somebody who has been in office for 28 years wins another term.
Was it alderman during the Harold Washington years? Like this man got name recognition.
Like this is it. Yeah, I think if either Conyers Irvin or Collins had shown up over managed to unseat Davis, that would have been a real, real upset. But
he still got campaign posters from the late 90s on the West Side under certain Vidocs. Like you just can't get rid of, especially in Congress. We talk about this every couple of years, right? If you can get in Congress, get a couple of terms under your belt, what that does for you as an incumbent. Like you said, it's a morning of big snooze when I just look across the places we live. In my district, the first, Jonathan Jackson ran unopposed. Simone, in your district, your representative ran unopposed across the board. In her party, there was no one in the
Republican party running.
Michelle, yours could have been interesting with Chewy Garcia facing off against antagonist Alder Raymond Lopez, but that one also didn't spark anything. So across Congress, it felt like a very incumbents got the momentum, and a lot of them are going to carry that into November because, as we know, Illinois politicians largely can kind of put their hat on it post-primary. But as we get closer to November, right, we will follow the potential surprises and likely snoozes. But Simone, Chicago has almost 1.7 million registered voters. When we talk about the energy around an election, how successful campaigns were bringing people out, how mobilized the young people, right? What are the age groups that commonly vote? That's kind of how we judge, right? The electoral process, whether it was a success or not, was how those turnout numbers looked. So what are early voter turnout numbers in the city of Chicago for our primary election?
Not great. I will start there. When the polls closed at 7 p.m. last night, voter turnout was around 20%, which is the lowest it's been in decades in a presidential primary. Just for comparison's sake, in 2020, we saw 38% turnout in Chicago. That was our COVID election. Mm-hmm. And then in 2016, when we had a really, really quite competitive primary, we saw 54% turnout in Chicago. Both of those elections also in March. So 20% is pretty abysmal. We will see that number tick up a little bit as mail-in ballots continue to come in. There's over 100,000 outstanding vote-by-mail ballots, but we're not expecting 100,000 ballots to come in there, right?
It probably won't take us over 30% or anything like that.
I find that highly unlikely, yeah.
I mean, there are so many reasons here. If we start at the very top of the ballot, I don't know a lot of people who seemed very excited to vote in the presidential elections. There were write-in campaigns for both candidates, right? There are huge feelings of disinterest and disengagement around both candidates. And that type of energy, how are people feeling about the presidential election, really trickles down in terms of, do people even show up at the polls?
Well, especially when, you know, Biden and Trump were already declared presumptive nominees by their party, right? So, mm-hmm. Like, it really made it feel like your vote didn't count when it came to the presidential race.
And again, though, when we had such big issues on our ballot, like Bring Chicago Home, the real estate transfer tax referendum, when we're looking at things like Cook County State's attorney's race, You know, what do you think people could have done more? Because again, as we started this conversation, it's like, I feel like after 3 years doing this podcast, I just don't have a good sense of what your everyday Chicagoan is talking about. I mean, even when I talk to some of my friends during primary day, it sort of hit me like, damn, we're doing this work every day. But even some of my friends like, oh, I didn't realize it was voting day, or oh, I really don't give a damn about voting, or oh, that was a great podcast episode y'all did about the Cook County State Attorney's race. Oh, you gonna be out there voting? Honestly, no, I ain't got time. I don't really feel like it's like, I don't know what more people can do from a voter education standpoint, from a voter rally standpoint. It feels like we've, you know, kind of moved away from the voter die fear mongering and something into a little bit more empowering. And it still feels like, again, the uninspiring nature of our politician, the complicated nature of our tax policy just makes people feel like they are better off staying at home.
I think in the other thing that we have to mention here, too, is like party primaries, right? You got to declare a party. You got to say, I'm voting Democrat. I'm voting Republican, right? Like you, which is, I think for a lot of people, especially now in 2024, kind of a distasteful thing. I think it also just frankly makes it more confusing in some ways. I can't just show up and get the same ballot that everyone else is getting. You know, I think it's got to be especially frustrating for local organizers who, you know, really want to be able to write something like Bring Chicago Home or the state's attorney's office. You want those are important things, and you want that to be able to stand on their own. But if you can't really connect it to the top of the ballot item, that presidential race, and you've got, you know, other messages that are swirling around how people should be approaching that race, you're going to really fail to kind of turn people out. I think another thing too that's worth noting is, like, in my experience in elections, and this isn't always true in every single one, low voter turnout also tends to favor the status quo. That is the thing. And even though progressives have shown that they can turn out in historically low turnout races, like municipal races, like we saw last year, you got to keep that momentum going every single year. Yeah.
It's already an uphill battle.
It's really tough.
It's already on a Tuesday, right? It's not a state or a national holiday.
It's not a holiday.
People do still have to take time away. There's so many factors that go into this.
I just think it's just disillusionment. Like you mentioned, people are really disillusioned right now. Simone, you mentioned about how kind of like we've always had this idea of having to align with the party. And we come from this time where my generation specifically, when we started, you know, specifically me, like I was able to start voting in 2016. That was my first election that I could vote in, right? I was, and so I think it really impacts people at the moment that we kind of started being able to vote, and what we kind of, the turmoil that we kind of just like walked into. Mm-hmm. And
it's only gotten more tumultuous.
And it's only gotten much, much more, much more fascinating. And I think people are just really disillusioned. Like back then, like, you know, you had to say if you were Democratic or Republican. Coming from starting to vote, it was like, it was embarrassing not to vote to some people. Like if you didn't vote, you kind of felt ashamed because people were so on that vote or die. Now it feels a little embarrassing to align yourself with the party because people are just disillusioned by both. Mm. It's embarrassing.
I like how you put that. And it's embarrassing. In a matter of eight years. Again, people are already starting to feel two-party system is not serving me. But where that conversation is now, I mean, I know we went to turnout. It seems like we at the end, but hold on. Okay, I was about to let y'all go. But Simone, I gotta know, what happened with that juicy Cook County Board of Review race we talked about a couple weeks ago, right? A lot of this conversation around, you know, what happens when we sell a property, but, you know, there's also a process in our city on determining how much a property is even worth, and there was some drama in the way that those decisions get made. Catch us up.
Yeah, so it looks like Larry Rogers Jr. has won a sixth term as Board of Review Commissioner, beating out challenger LaRisha Tucker by a pretty large margin. If you're hearing these names and you're like, who are you talking about? You should definitely go back and listen to our conversation with Alex Nitkin about this race, where we got all the tea. Basically, the Board of Review hears property tax appeals after the assessor's office assigns value. Assessor Fritz Kagi and the now presumed winner, Larry Rogers Jr., do not get along. And Kagi backed Tucker, and there were a lot of words that were said, and lots
both
of
people said both people said that their opponents were in the pocket of sort of big business and big money. Like, they were lobbing the same attack at each other over the pickleball court.
There was something like that, yeah. And I think Kagi had hoped to make a good showing on here and maybe convert essentially the board of review, but didn't happen. So, we will be keeping an eye out on property tax battles continues.
Part of me is like, come on. Like, now that I'm familiar with this saga, with this discontent between the two of them, I'm going to be following this more over the next couple years than I ever have been.
We'll drop a link in the show notes if you want to hear it.
For a full list of results, including Cook County Clerk of the Circuit Court and other key congressional races, head over to chicago.citycast.fm. I want to give a huge thank you to our executive producer, Simone Alisea.
Thanks, Jacoby.
And producer, Michelle Navarro.
Thank you, Jacoby.
We are up at now 6 a.m. bringing y'all the latest in election results. But before I let you go, while you're on the website going through those election results, stay a while and check out the neighborhood guides, best food and drink list. And if you click that little menu tab over in the corner, you see it. You see it, right? Right? We got a newsletter, events calendar. Oh, and what is that I see? Is that membership and advertising opportunities? Yes, we got it all at chicago.citycast.fm. But something you only gonna find exclusively on the podcast, some good news. The Newberry Library's Writers on Writing series is back tomorrow evening, featuring two of my absolute favorites, Hanif Abdul-Rakib and Eve Ewing. It's going to be online as well, so you can check the show notes for more. I appreciate y'all making time to listen. This has been a fantastic 5 a.m. session, but I'm going to go take a nap now. I'm going to talk to y'all later. Peace. For a full list of results, including Cook County Clerk of the Circuit, I knew I was going to do it. I had faith.